has a podcast, and now here's the guy who is hiding a disadvantage in his pants. I am Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. Very excited. Voicemail edition of the podcast. I really look at the voicemail podcast as the people's podcast, where we start things off, we talk to Stephen Fishback, we get into all the strategy, we talk to a former survivor, we get their take on everything, we hear the exit interview, but now it's your turn, listeners of Rob Has a Podcast. Now you guys set the agenda. We're talking about what you guys called in here on your show, The Feedback Show, and we've got a great guest to kick off episode number one of the feedback show for Survivor HHH. He is a man who's coming off a run like no other. That what a summer it's been. The summer of Taryn was here between the Big Brother 2 blockumentary, all of the work he did on Big Brother 19, the daily live feed updates going on Rob as a Podcast, and then, of course, the coup de grace working on the great first one out with Josh Wiggler these last couple of months. Please welcome back the host of the Taryn Show, Taryn Armstrong. Taryn, how are you?
I'm great. I'm super excited to be talking Survivor. A couple years ago, I'd have to call into the back half of Jordan Parhar's show to talk about Survivor. And now look at me. I'm on the voicemail back half of Survivor talking.
Yes. Anyway, very excited to get into everything, Taryn. And again, kudos for all of the work that you and Josh did on First One Out. I'm not sure if everybody got a chance to listen to the final piece of First One Out. Maybe they felt like, okay, well, I heard Katrina's exit interview. I don't need to hear that. I actually thought that the final part of First One Out was pretty much just going to be Josh talking to Katrina. It was actually really amazing, the final part. It's almost 2 hours, including all the stuff going on with Jeff Probst. And the last 20 minutes is really fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. It's my favorite episode, I think, that we did. It's really cool. Like, I love the seriousness that Josh takes to the idea, and we try to make it like nice and dramatic and fun. And there's a lot of really interesting information that comes to. I was just talking to Josh, and I was telling him it's almost like. First One Out was sort of like hearing live feed correspondence from Jeff and Matt Van Wagenen. They were telling us all of the like information of the things that happened on those first 3 days. They were relaying it to us like they were live feed correspondents. And I feel like there was so much more information that I was able to glean from what was actually happening than what I'm used to when I watch Survivor. So that was really fun just from that aspect alone.
Yeah, the fun thing was to hear, of course, that we all have known for quite some time, Josh Wiggler, how he loves Survivor, and hearing him talk about it is often like getting his love letter to Survivor. But that's why I always love talking to people from production, because I think that people who are just like in the social media universe often think of them, oh, the producers are sort of they don't care about the show, they don't care about the fans. But whenever you hear production people talk, especially the people that are on location and working on the show on a day-to-day basis, they all talk about the show with so much love for what they get to do, and all of that stuff that's in there is really fantastic. So again, great job to you both putting it all together, and here we are on the first feedback show of the season. And Taryn, I mentioned at the top of the show the run that you've been on. Could you just tell the listeners what you've been up to with the Taryn Show?
I've had this idea for a podcast where I get to know the people that you listen to all the time from the podcast or that you watch on these shows, Big Brother or Survivor, and get to know them on a level that you maybe haven't seen or heard from them before, a more personal level. And that's where really the idea came from. And so I pitched the idea to Rob, and he liked it. This idea that we're going to like really dive deep into these people in long form interviews. And it's just been a blast. I mean, the first one was with you, and you talked all about Rob Has a Podcast and how you started it and your motivation and what drives you. And then, of course, getting into Brent, who is one of my fellow live feed correspondents for Big Brother. He has a very interesting history, that was like a true crime podcast, basically, and people really enjoyed that. And it's been so much fun just getting to have conversations with people and getting to relay them and release them out and letting other people listen. It's been amazing.
So really fun stuff Taryn has been working on, if you haven't checked any of that out. All right. So Taryn, we've had a great week on the podcast with Stephen Fishback. We spoke with Ethan Zahn. And then what did you think of my interview with Ethan?
I loved it. I always love hearing from Ethan. It's great to hear from the I mean, man, Ethan, when I was a kid, you know, I watched the first season of Survivor and I remembered the naked guy. I watched the second season and I kind of remembered Colby, but I wasn't like the biggest Colby fan. But I was in love with Ethan when I saw Ethan in Africa. He had curly hair like me. He played soccer like me. I was just like, this guy is amazing. I love him. And he won the game. It was if I was capable of making a child at that time, I would have named him Ethan.
Yeah. No, people have a real reverence for Ethan that they may not have for many other players, that they just, hold him in this high regard. Obviously, you know, you have Dr. Mike, who names a son after Ethan. And we won't even get into what Mrs. Zahalski thinks of Ethan's on. So, it's amazing that, you know, all this time later that people still, hold him in that high regard, and everything that he's been through, obviously, since the show, with his battle with cancer and his amazing recovery from it. And before we jump into the voicemails, I just want to also mention Taryn is going to be out in Reno with Stephen Fishback and I for Run It Up Reno coming up next month. Are you excited about that?
Very excited. Combining many of my loves, the podcast, Stephen Fishback, poker, Tyson is going to be there. I mean, many of my loves.
Yeah. Also, Adam Klein is going to be out there as well. And confirmed this week that Kevin Martin, winner of Big Brother Canada 5, is going to be there as well. So if you want to join us for Survivor Know-It-Alls, check out runitupreno.com. Actually, no admission required for the Run It Up Reno Survivor Viewing Party Know-It-Alls show that we're going to be doing up there, with After Party to follow, all courtesy of Jason Somerville and the Run It Up Reno event at the Peppermill Resort at runitupreno.com. And then also coming up this Thursday, I'll be at the Hollywood Improv for the Survivor Match Game. Still some tickets available for that if you want to come out and see that live. We will have the podcast and video version of that up shortly thereafter. So let's jump into our questions, Taryn. So let's jump into the episode. What did you think of the first week? Now, you were in the position of that you had listened to all of this footage coming out about the first one out. Obviously, you knew Katrina was the first one out. Did the episode fit the expectations of what you had? Obviously, Josh was there. He already lived it, but you were just hearing what people were saying at that time.
Yeah, I guess I'm in a pretty unique situation in terms of that, because I listened to probably close to 30 plus hours of raw footage from Josh's experience there. And so I had a very clear picture of what I expected the episode to look like. And I'd been holding on to that for a really long time. And I was like really excited for people to watch this, what I thought would be this amazing premiere. And then it was only an hour and I was like, uh-oh, I don't know if that's going to work. And then watching it, it was like, boom, all of the stuff that I knew just like compressed into this tiny, tiny little piece. And as a Big Brother live feed watcher, I'm kind of used to that. But this really felt rushed to me. It definitely, I was expecting like a top tier, like one of the best premieres we've seen in a while. And I think what we got was amusing and fun at best.
And ultimately, we had the boot of Katrina, which you obviously knew was going to come because you edited Josh's interview with her that was recorded at Ponderosa. What did you think of what we saw from Katrina in the episode? Did that match what you had been hearing from her?
No, not at all. Katrina, she's such a fun and wacky and like out there person. And I know that like when you and Josh were going over the interviews for RJP. You were expecting her to be this big character. And honestly, even though I knew she was only going to be in one episode, I expected her to be one of the stars of the episode. Certainly, I knew that the strip search was going to be a highlight as well. But I was really expecting her character to come out and shine. And I felt like we got nothing of it. Like, you know, I guess they really wanted to shine this spotlight on this mom squad. Yes, keep shining. And make it seem like the storyline was about the mom squad. But man, I really felt like they underserved Katrina's personality. And, you know, I think that's unfortunate. But at the same time, they were only given an hour to work with, and I'm not sure where they could have fit that in, given all the other stuff they had. So I can't throw too much blame on them.
Okay, so let's get into our first voicemail question of the season. This comes to us from one of our callers, Matthew, who wants to talk about Katrina as a first boot.
Hello, it's Matthew. I'm calling from Sweden. Where does Katrina rank as a first boot?
Okay. Taryn, in the Evolution of Strategy, of course, available at evolutionofstrategy.com, I ranked all of the first boots in order of how I thought they would do and, you know, how screwed over they ultimately got. While I'm not going to place Katrina into the pantheon, I think it's actually pretty difficult to be able to take anything away from her game, because unlike many of the first boots that we've seen in Survivor history, she did not have like one major mistake that she made. And that'll be actually pretty interesting to see what David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis come up with later on this week when they get to why Katrina lost. I don't really have a good answer.
Yeah, I mean, not only did we not really see anything from her in the episode, I felt like she's probably one of the most underserved first person out characters that we've seen. But yeah, even in terms of the game, knowing what happened, I mean, the most that anyone could really say was, yeah, she just didn't gel with the people there. That was really about it. And it's not like it was even like that bad. She says herself that maybe she was playing a little too hard, like she was talking game a little too much, and that people weren't really reciprocating that. But it really just felt like, you know, by default, she was kind of the odd one out. And so they just voted her out.
So Rob's fact checker on Twitter actually ran the numbers and tried to find where Katrina landed in terms of, I said that she might have been maybe the most under-edited first boot in the history of the show. She's actually tied for second least. Diane Ogden and Jonathan from Survivor Palau, who went out with Wanda, they both had one confessional. I guess she had two, tied with Tina, Jim Lynch, Sugar, Wendy Jo, Semhar, Courtney Moon, and Katrina. All of them had two confessionals in their first boot episode. So again, we didn't see very much from her. But I guess in a way, that's sort of a good thing in that, well, she wasn't terrible. She didn't do anything to make people upset that they just said, hey, you're the older person in this tribe. We can't have two older people on this tribe. You're the one that has to go.
Yeah, and that was part of it, too, where it was like the tribe just really wasn't a great fit for her, both in terms of personality, but also in terms of the fact that there was another, you know, I don't want to call her an older woman. She's trying to, I don't know if she went along with this, but she was going to try to pretend that she was 39. But the fact that there was another, like, older woman on the tribe, I think hurt her chances even more, because you can't keep both of them, if you're talking about tribe strength, if that's sort of like your thing. She didn't have a chance to shine in a swimming competition or anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, just kind of bad breaks for her. Not that I was expecting like a whole lot, but I do think that she got the raw end of the stick here.
Right. Now, of course, being with Chrissy, we saw talk about the Survivor Mom Squad, Taryn, and the Mom Squad did not really get to keep shining as we saw one half of the quote unquote Mom Squad go out this week. But I do have some good news for fans of the Mom Squad, that there has actually, you know, with all of these movies like The Avengers and The Justice League, I do have on good authority that CBS has officially now, Taryn, greenlit the movie project to send the Mom Squad back out to Survivor. Did you hear about this?
I did not, Rob. What is this?
Yes. Okay. Well, I have an exclusive for you guys that the Mom Squad movie is going to be coming out summer 2018. We actually have the trailer here for the Mom Squad movie. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
She's a mom.
If you find yourself stuck on an island in the South Pacific, you better steer clear of the Mom Squad. There's Missy.
Get in the back seat and let me drive.
Trish.
I think you're terrible. I think you might be the most
Wait a second, I have a question. Do you think I'm annoying?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. You know what? Now ask me if I care.
Sari.
I'm a gangster in an Oprah suit.
Tina.
That's another today.
Dawn. And Holly.
I've been too nice up to this point, but the game has just begun.
Mother Dearest, more like Mother Fearest, when you're dealing with the Mom Squad.
She's a mom.
Older lady.
The Stephen Fishback Sandy K at the end really kills me.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be a hit, Rob. I mean, that hits all the right demographics. We're talking about the next biggest thing here.
Right. 2017, down year at the movies. But once Mom Squad hits the theaters, that's really going to be
older lady.
Yeah, you know, that's a big phenomenon.
How many Oscar nods do you think this is going to get?
All of them. Sweep the Aussies. Yeah. So, Taryn, kudos to Will from America and Matt Price, who were the screenwriters of the Mom Squad. So, look for Katrina in her big comeback role coming to theaters near you. Let's take another question. And this is a voice you may recognize who wants to talk about maybe did Ryan mishandle the Super Idol? Here is somebody who has been giving this some thought.
Hey, Rob, this is Brent Wagamat, and I have a question for you and the always wrong Taryn Armstrong. So this question gets in the weeds a little bit, so if you guys will just indulge me, but I think that the people who listen to this type of podcast will really enjoy thinking about this. So given how liberally the show let Tony Vlachos of Survivor Cagayan run all over that island, spewing different lies about the Tyler Perry Super Idol, where he found it, who he could play it for, how long it could be played for, was it the final four, was it the final three? Given that somewhat amazing precedent, do we think that young Sir Ryan Ulrich missed an opportunity? And by that, I mean this. For strategy nerds like myself, if you look at the parchment that the idol came with, it said, congratulations, you have found the super immunity idol. You can play it after the votes are read. You can play it for somebody else, and the person with the next highest number of votes will be sent home. There was then a big space, and it went on to detail the twist about giving it away. Do we think that young Ryan could have simply ripped the parchment in half, taken the parchment with the idol, showed his entire tribe, look, I have the Tyler Perry Super Idol, I found it on the boat, and that information would have totally deterred them from targeting him at any time, especially given that there's only six people in the tribe, and even after a swap or a merge, that information would have spread like wildfire, even if the show took away the idol and the parchment itself. Do we think that young Sir Ryan could have pulled this off? What say you guys?
Taryn, at first I thought, okay, this is crazy talk from Brent. No way they'd let that happen. But I thought about it like, maybe? Does he have a point?
I mean, he took a really long time to get there. But you know, yeah, I mean, I think that I think that this is a good idea. I think that, you never know what they're going to allow. But I certainly would have tried it. You know, when he was reading that that clue or the message or whatever, I was like, man, this is really cruel. It's making it seem like he's going to have a super idol only to tear away his hopes when he gets to the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And if that really was the case, then, you know, he could easily have torn that thing. The bottom tear would have looked you know, appropriate for the aesthetic. And I think then the only thing you have to be worried about is, you know, if people are like, well, why would we want you to be able to keep a super idol? Why don't we just put all the votes on you and then split some other votes onto some other people to flush it? You could find yourself, you know, essentially talking your way out of the game. So it's kind of like, I think it's kind of a risky maneuver because you have to do it in those first 3 days before you send it away. And if you don't do that, then you've lost the opportunity. If you do that, you've put yourself in a position where you have to make that call before you have a good read on your tribe to know how they'll respond to it. So I like the idea if you think it's a good play, if you think that the tribe will respond to it well. But if you're ever called to use it for the tribe or anything like that, you could put yourself into a weird spot. You know, the super idols, they've worked very effectively toward the back half of the game because the numbers are getting to the point where it's hard to split votes onto people and it's hard to take a risk to take somebody out when you're so close to the money. We haven't seen how it's played out in the first half of the game. I feel like people would be much more likely to be willing to flush that idol or to take a shot at you because they're not going to wait the entire game just because they think you have a super idol.
So I think there's two problematic things with this idea. One, so Ryan actually had to transfer the idol to somebody if they did not go to that first tribal council. So he wasn't going to be able to keep the idol in his possession. Whereas if they went to that first tribal council, and maybe this is maybe a reason why he should have thrown the first challenge. I know Ryan said in the preseason he didn't want to go to the first tribal council. But if he knew he wasn't going to go home at that first tribal council, if he felt good enough and then had that super idol where he knew no matter what, he couldn't get voted out. And then if he didn't use it, he had the ability to keep it as a fake immunity idol. I think that that's maybe a more interesting discussion to have. But he had to give it away. So now he just has a note and said, the note says, I have a super idol. I think that's shady. I think that you're just going around showing people your note like Epstein on Welcome Back, Kotter. For a reference that Taryn doesn't know what I'm talking about. So just to show people like, well, I've got a note. It says right here, look, read the fine print. I have a super idol. And then people say, oh, but where is it? Like, don't you concern yourself with that. I just walk around with the note. I don't carry it with me. It's too bulky. I keep it hidden. Just read my note. And then the second problematic part of it, which is going to be a little shady, is the survivors do not have access to scissors, a paper cutter, maybe the machete, but I don't think that you are going to make a very fine edge, and it will definitely look like you have just an idle clue that some part has been ripped off, and maybe as you could fold it like 100 times and maybe try to get it neat, but it's, I don't think it's going to ever look right. So you're saying, like, was there a bottom part of that? Why is that perforated on the bottom?
It's just the look, Rob. It's just, I don't know. I don't know why.
They must be cutting the budget back on this. Maybe they made a mistake on the bottom half and they just recut that
part. They can't afford paper cutters. Yeah. And I think also, like, a big glaring flaw is, you know, obviously if Chrissy makes the merge, she will be able to, in fact, reveal, like, oh, yeah, it was actually a given to me. He doesn't have it anymore.
But what do you think of the idea then of Ryan? Should they have gone to that first tribal council, especially if he was feeling safe, if there was somebody from his group they wanted to get rid of? Is that just way too dicey? He then gets to keep this thing to be able to use as a fake idol moving forward. There's no chance he can go home at that first tribal council. In fact, even if his closest ally went home, he could play the idol for a, I mean, he'd be going into that first tribal council with an incredible amount of power.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I don't know, because it's obviously a risky thing to do to eliminate your numbers. I think it depends on his position in that tribe. If he felt like he needed to get somebody out, then maybe it would be worth it. But if he feels like he's pretty solid with the tribe and he doesn't need anyone out, like, I think he's probably correct in not wanting to go to a tribal. I think that going into a merge with numbers, I mean, we talk about the intentional Matt Singh, but I think that this is probably the better move. And I like what I heard from, because basically this wasn't really explained on the episode, but they talked about it on First One Out, where Ryan and Devin, like, their plan was, you know, we're going to share this with somebody that we don't think is going to use it, and then they'll get to keep it. And then when we meet up with them at a swap or at a merge, we're going to have some leverage. We're going to have some ability to be like, hey, we sent this to you. Like, let's work together. They have some kind of connection on another tribe.
Wait, hold on a second. I like the theory and I like what you're saying, but how could they think the woman who threw up at the challenge was somebody who was definitely not going home?
That's the part that confuses me, because when I heard it on the recording, I was like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. They clearly just knew that Chrissy wasn't going to go home. I don't know how they knew, but clearly they knew it. But then when you watch the episode, it seems, or at least it's edited to seem like it's very clear that Chrissy should be going home after she throws up. I don't know. I really don't know. But they, from the way that it was described on the podcast, it sounded like they were very aware of the fact that Chrissy would not go home. She was the option if the heroes went to tribal, that they were going to give it to her. I have no idea why they thought that or how they knew that, but it seemed to be their intention. I think that maybe part of the idea was they were going to maybe try to gamble and give it to somebody that they thought might be on the outs, but also not go home first. Maybe they had an idea that like this goofy older woman would probably go before the, more momish kind of older woman. And so they thought, well, if we give it to Chrissy, then Katrina will go home first. Chrissy will be grateful. Chrissy will retain the idol. And then that will work out. And she won't have, she'll be somebody that's easier to flip. If we get her to a merge or a swap or something like that. But I'd just be curious to know what their thought process was. I was excited to see it on the episode. So hopefully we get it in a future one.
So let's get into another question. And I've got a few questions actually that are about everything going on with Alan and the heroes and JP and Ashley and the hashtag idol strip search, because I think that we can all say that Alan was really the star of that first episode. I listened this morning to the RHAP B&B podcast where they had our friend Jordan Parhar as the guest, and Jordan Parhar says that Alan is the MVP of the episode, that he really did save this from being a very boring Survivor premiere, that he was the unquestioned star of the show. And so let's talk a little bit about Alan. And so let me bring you this question. This is from Phil, who wants to know about Alan's potential trajectory in this game.
Hey, Robin Biscuit, it's Phil Torres, and my question is about Alan Ball. Do we think Alan Ball can win Survivor? Because we just saw one of the most erratic players ever, sort of making a bad impression early on in the game and then going on to actually take it home in Big Brother, Joshua. So do we think Alan is potentially has that in him? Do you think Alan is Alan Meatball? Oh, God. Okay. Anyways, thanks for taking my call.
Okay,
really,
Karen.
Cracking yourself up there.
Yeah. What do we think about the idea of hashtag Alan Meatball? Could it happen? We had a very eccentric character who we watched the first week of the show. We watched him in the pregame interviews. We said, okay, this guy has no chance. He's all over the place. He is way too emotional. There's no way he could pull this off, Taryn. JP and Ashley, you just played yourself.
I didn't even ask you to strip. You stripped anyway. I mean, I think there's a reason.
Is that a meatball in your pants?
I think there's a reason that we usually say that people like Josh or Alan can't win the game. And I think it's a good reason. I think that Josh winning Big Brother 19 was a bit of a fluke. And it's going to be pretty hard to replicate. So, I wouldn't say 100% Alan cannot ever win, because I don't think that's ever really true. But I don't think he has a very good shot at winning. I mean, this was pretty crazy. Apparently, he was ranting for hours at Tribal about this, continually repeating.
We only had 8 hours of bonding!
Should he have brought the kettle from camp and, like, the machete? He's like, come on, let's go! What are you hiding?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at this point, just go all out. You know, bring out the pots, the pans, the machetes, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And just really go meatballs to the wall.
In fairness, Alan Meatball did not cry at all during the first episode. So I do think he has that up on Josh.
You never know what might happen, though.
Yeah, we never
know. Let's not count it out.
Don't count it out, but
more likely that he cries during Survivor than he wins, I think.
Sure, I'll take that bet. So Alan Meatball could be a thing. All right, here is a question from one of our longtime podcast friends. This is from Fuggy Bootenling, who has a question about that scene of the hashtag idol strip search.
Hey Rob, it's Fuggy Bootenling here. Am I crazy, or during the idol strip search scene, could you not see, well, you couldn't see JP's ass, but you could see little JP in that scene. Am I crazy here? Thoughts?
Okay. So, I have gone back and I've watched this scene a number of times here. And so, Fuggy Bootenling says that did the CBS censors let one slip by in the same way that there is a track record there between Rhino and Dr. Marcus? Did they slip up Taryn?
You know, Rob, when you asked me to do this podcast, I was thinking Survivor. Yeah, totally more mature. It's like higher brow than Big Brother. And now here we are trying to figure out if little JP slipped out of the censor. I have no idea, Rob. You went back and looked. How did it go? Well, I mean, we'll see what happens and things like that.
So I went back and I looked at the footage, and now this is night vision. So this is a little bit of a different animal. So a little bit hard to figure. And I have to say, upon my first time going back through, I mean, JP is facing away from the camera, and there is definitely a blur going on in the posterior area. But I did look in the same way that Dr. Mike would professionally examine the situation. That is what I did. And I said, oh, wait, hold on a second. I think maybe I see what we're going on. I thought perhaps I spotted JP's bag of tricks, Taryn.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
I said, wait, hold on a second. Could this be? Is that right? And then I think what's going on there, I believe that it is what you are seeing is the front side of his shorts through. I believe that CBS is in the clear. I don't think that there is anything that you are seeing that you should not see.
I mean, that's good news for JP. I mean, he wouldn't want his things like that to be exposed in any way. And that would not be something that he would like people to wait and see what happens.
No. Okay. So that's in the clear. Thank goodness for that.
I got to say, if you're an editor and you're blurring this, like, even if you know that it's, I mean, granted, this is not a job I would want to be like fine detail blurring of JP's JP. But even if it's not the thing, if it even looks like the thing, just blur it so people don't think it's the thing. And then we don't have to have these conversations.
Right. And I'm sure that he's not going to complain about the extra blurring.
Yeah.
He'll be happy. Exactly. Please blur away. Blur as much as you want.
Huge blur. That's not even flesh colored. Why is that blurred?
Right.
No, it needed it.
Right. Okay, let's stay on this, not exact topic. Let's stay on the idol strip search. Here's Laura O.
Hey, Rob and Taryn. This is Laura Oyer. I have a very important question about the hashtag idol strip search situation. I understand the reasoning behind JP dropping his shorts to prove to Alan he didn't have a crotch idol going on, but can we talk about the hopping? Why the hopping? Was JP trying to show that nothing was tucked places? Was Alan attempting to have him dislodge an idol from somewhere? Is there any kind of idol that could be hidden by naked standing, but revealed by naked jumping and things like that, or hopping and things like that. Clear up the jumping JP thing for me.
Okay, just to reset this. Just to reset this. So that JP ends up, I wouldn't necessarily say hopping. There definitely was some bouncing that was going on there. And I don't know. I thought, could this be twerking, perhaps? But no, maybe this was just hopping. Was he either A, trying to dislodge something that it may be to prove, like, hey, there's nothing that's, like, you know, just being held up by gravity here? Or do you think that maybe he was just trying to, like, shimmy back into his pants? Are they tight pants?
There's some insight on this. This is actually a mating ritual.
Oh.
JP, I think he must have learned it from his dog, Thor. But yeah, as soon as you drop chow, it's just instinct. You got to start hopping and showing off what you got.
Is that what it is? I mean, yeah. This is a very unusual situation also for a showmance, because you have JP who is standing there with his accuser and his potential, you know, romantic partner of interest, and then has to end up, becoming a naked person in front of Alan. So this was a very unusual circumstance.
Rob, I think we're really behind the ball here. I mean, I think we should be talking about JP, the mastermind, because he killed two birds with one stone here.
Right.
He proved to Alan that he doesn't have an idol, and then got to show Ashley what he's working with.
Yeah, that's a power move. That was a power move to Alan to say, "Hey, look, you wanna come at me, bro? Okay, hey everybody, watch this." So good on JP for pulling that off.
When JP is the winner of Survivor Triple H, we're going to be looking back at this like, man, he really innovated some strategies here.
That was an alpha move that JP pulled off, not a beta.
Yeah.
He's not a beta.
He would get along with Cody very well.
Yeah, he'd be great on The Amazing Race, maybe JP and Ashley, season 31. Taryn,
there you go.
So this isn't a voicemail, but I did think that Alan started off that whole conversation on a really menacing tone. So we knew that Alan thought that JP potentially had the idol, but I really did think that this was an odd way of asking him about it.
How far are you willing to go to prove that?
Let's go for a swim makes it sound like let's go down by the water so I can murder you. And then Joe, like, well, let's go for, how does, is let's go for, like, is let's go for a swim, like, okay, now let's go to the water, now take off all your clothes and get in the water while I examine your belongings.
I maybe there was some waterboarding that was going to be talked about. I don't know. Let's go for a swim. It sounds like he's going to be swimming with the fishes.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds very, you know, very intense. Like, it doesn't sound like JP is coming back from let's go swimming with Alan.
Clearly, Alan pictured himself as a mafioso, like, boss here. Like, I know you have, like, I've already caught you. You have the idol. You have it. And he's like, no, I don't. He's like, no. Well, how far are you going to go to prove it? Because we're going to go swimming right now. And you don't want to do that.
Yeah. Like, no, not swimming. No, anything but that. No.
And he has that knowing look like, I know. And you know that I know. But he doesn't know. So it's very strange.
Yeah. I guess from where JP is coming from, like, no, why do you want to go swimming right now? It's nighttime. It's night. I don't want to go swimming.
How far am I willing to go? I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll go swimming. Like, if swimming proves to you that I don't have an idol, I guess I'll swim.
Yeah. All right, Taryn, this is a question from Gregory McBean, which is answering a question that we had during the preseason of Survivor 34.
What's going on, Rob and Taryn? This is Gregory McBean. Was seeing JP strip to prove that he didn't have the idol evidence enough to prove that Haley Ford really was a game changer? Thanks. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Bye-bye.
Haley Ford, back in season 34, said when everybody was accusing her of having an idol, she said, hey, well, I could take my clothes off at this tribal council. I think actually Jeff might have thrown that out there and said, hey, why don't you strip? And she said, well, I'll do it. I'll do it. But somebody's got to ask me for it. Did she, ex post facto, Taryn, in that moment become a game changer? If you want to prove you are innocent, you do not have an idol, what you need to do is take off all your clothes. And does that lay the groundwork for Richard Hatch's inevitable return to Survivor, where he will win and nobody will ever accuse him of having the idol?
Look, Rob, in the history of Survivor, there are talkers and there are doers. And JP is a doer. He didn't have to have somebody ask him to drop Trow. He went for it. He went for it immediately. It didn't matter. How far are you willing to go, JP? And his clothes are already off. Haley, she was like, she's too hesitant. She didn't take the clothes off.
Yes.
She's not a game changer. JP is a game changer because he actually took the step. He took his clothes off. Did he go home that night? No.
He perfected what Haley put out there.
Yes, and that is game changing.
Yeah, so JP is the game changer. Bring him back, not Haley Ford?
Absolutely, and things like that.
Okay, good job by JP. This is a question from Sammy, who is noticing maybe a theme going on in 2017 on the premiere of these CBS reality shows.
Hey guys, this is Sammy. Just noticed an interesting pattern with the premiere episodes of BB19 and Survivor 35. A lot of stripping going on. Do you think this will be a pattern that's continued throughout the premiere episodes, or is this just a one-time event? Love to hear your thoughts.
Okay. Taryn, your pick for America's favorite player, Cameron, also stripped in the Big Brother 19 premiere. Is this a note that is coming from network to juice the ratings, where what we need to have happen, somehow get this idea out there? Hey, look, if things are going wrong, if you're getting too much heat, get naked. Trust us. It'll save you.
Well, there's going to be a segment on the Taryn show called First Stripper Out, where I talk to Cameron and then JP and discover the real truth behind the stripping on these shows. So stay tuned on The Taryn Show.
Looking forward to that. Is it effective? Seems like it's 50-50 so far.
I think it depends. It depends on what the motivation is. If you're stripping to win people over, I guess we kind of saw that on the Amazon. How effective was that for you, Rob?
Effective.
There we go. So if you're a beautiful woman and you're stripping to win people over, I think it's effective. If you're a beautiful man like Cameron or JP and you're trying to do it to win people over, probably not effective.
Right.
It doesn't matter how beautiful you are. Nobody wants to see a guy strip like that. But if you're doing it to prove your innocence, everyone knows that innocent people, their first reaction is to start stripping their clothes off. Kevin did it on Big Brother 19 and it proved to everyone that he was innocent. So I think clearly, if you're doing it to maintain your innocence, it's totally going to work.
Okay. Taryn, let me play you a voicemail from Susie, who has an idea that she's concerned that maybe Game Changer JP is going to change the game too much, too many survivors getting naked to prove they don't have the idols, which is going to completely cut down on the amount of idols used in the game. How can the producers react to this and stay one head of the game? Here's Susie with an idea.
Hi, Rob and Taryn. This is Susie, not from Gabon. So with Alan strip searching JP and fake Tony bullying poor Dr. Mike, accusing him of having an idol, I'm so far really enjoying this season of Survivor Naked versus Afraid. What do you think about Survivor making flesh-colored immunity idols that can be camouflaged to hide on your nude body in the highly likely event that the strip search becomes common practice? Love the podcast. Love Taryn's new podcast. Love you so much. Okay, bye.
Okay. Taryn, do you like the idea of the flesh-colored immunity idol?
I mean, it's brilliant, obviously. I mean, you got to stay one step ahead of the players. We saw that on Big Brother Canada. Kevin, he outsmarted the producers. The producers, they got to stay on top of this. JP, he's an innovator. He's doing everything he can to outsmart the producers. They need to take another step forward. They need to make flesh-colored idols, Rob.
What should the shape of the flesh-colored idol be?
I think we all know what shape it should be, Rob.
Okay. Well, that's problematic for a number of reasons. One, not everybody has the same color flesh on Survivor. So that's issue number one. And I don't know, not everybody has the same body parts. Is the answer, do we need a clear immunity idol? Do we need some sort of a transparent immunity idol?
It's like the invisible cloak from Harry Potter or something, like
something like that.
Does it also have to be like sticky because it has to like stick to you? And then it's just like, what is it? Clear glass? It doesn't seem like it would work very well, Rob.
Okay, so you don't like the clear tube immunity idol.
No, you gotta. How's this for an idol? Like, just make everyday objects idols. So it's like you've got like a bracelet. That's an idol. There you go.
Yeah.
Now nobody knows.
Well, I feel like they've tried to do that with making the or at least where the idols were hidden look like everyday objects. Do you want the like items around camp to be the immunity idol? Like the machete is the immunity idol.
Yeah,
it's like, I'm going to play this tonight. Like, no, don't do that. We need the machete. It's like, well, I'm on the shopping block. I got
why is he taking the machete to tribal council? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Really would bring a whole new meaning to your confessional about Matt sharpening the machete.
Yeah, why does he need the machete so sharp? Oh, okay. It's the hidden immunity idol. Now I get it.
There you
now
go.
That all makes sense.
All okay. These years later.
Taryn, let's talk about Chrissy and ultimately her getting sick at the immunity challenge. We talked about her ending up being the recipient of the idol and whether or not those two things were connected. Here's Owen with an interesting, maybe could Chrissy be a game changer next?
Hey Rob, Owen from Connecticut here. So we saw Chrissy throw up in front of the entire cast and then Ryan gave her a super idol because he perceived her as weak. Do you think in the future we might see this as a new strategy with physical threats making themselves throw up to take the targets off their back?
Okay, Taryn, what do you think about this? The idea that an Ozzy, that a Malcolm, they come back to Survivor, and what they end up doing is just throw up violently after every single challenge they participate in. Would that help keep them in the game?
I think if Tyson is listening to this podcast, he is very angry because he had to dislocate his arm to do this. And all he needed to do is throw up. I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. Tyson, you overplayed your hand.
That's it. Let it out.
Yeah, just let it all out. Let it all out. You'll be fine. Immunity threats. Of course, that's what those were the comforting words of Jeff Probst after Chrissy ended up getting sick.
I thought that was out of context, but it actually was in context. That's terrible.
Literally, just let it out. Just let it out. And there you go, Chrissy. To salute Chrissy and the effort she put forth in a losing cause for the heroes, we have a serenade for her from the great Shut Up Tim, had a song just in her honor.
Ralph, that's it, let it all out. You'll get a super idol if you heave it all out, Chrissy. 'Cause Ryan's looking at you to spew.
There it is, Taryn.
There you go. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I don't know if we can give Chrissy the credit. Didn't Bobby John throw up after the first Guatemala challenge?
I think a lot of people were throwing up at that point.
Yeah, that's true. I remember Bobby John the clearest, though.
That's it. Let it out.
Just let it out, Bobby John. Go for it.
Yeah. Let it all out.
Yeah.
So it's new. There was a game changer season, but this season is just full of game changers.
Yeah, everybody is coming up with new stuff.
We're talking a new meta. A new meta is happening. You're going to taking your clothes off and throwing up everywhere on your clear idols.
Yes. Have we seen naked people vomiting yet? That's really the next level stuff.
It is. I mean, you get naked people vomiting and you can't even buy those ratings.
Taryn, I have a question for you from Eddie about how Chrissy knew exactly what you could and couldn't do in the challenge.
Did Chrissy read in the rule book that if she throws up during the challenge, she gets the idol?
Was that in the rule book that Chrissy read, Taryn?
Yeah, I mean, man, again, we're just discovering so many things. Chrissy from Big Brother OTT, I'm sure everybody that listens to this podcast is familiar with her. But this picture went around. She consulted the rule book, and we didn't know why. Nothing ever came of it until now. She disguised herself. She got onto Survivor, and she saw in the rule book, if you throw up during that challenge, you will get the idol. And man, she played it perfectly.
All Chrissies know the rules. All right. Here's a question from Graham, who wants to know about Chrissy potentially teaming up with Ben. What is the right course of action for them? Graham from the Bay.
Hey, Rob and Taryn. It's Graham from the Bay. What I want to talk about is this new quote-unquote power duo we saw
in the preview for the next episode with Ben and Chrissy. Now, Ben's in an interesting spot because he's cool with everybody, but Alan has clearly separated himself from JP and Ashley. So if this Ben and Chrissy duo is going to stick, should the two of them join up with Alan to go after Ashley and JP, or should they join up with Ashley and JP to take out Alan? Love to get your thoughts. Thanks, guys.
Taryn, looking forward at this. By the way, in terms of Chrissy, did you agree with her decision to not use the idol on Katrina?
I did, absolutely. I mean, this puts her in the best spot. She's in a great position here. She may be the weakest one on the tribe remaining, theoretically, but I don't think that matters. I think that there's enough animosity in this tribe that she will easily be able to slide by, especially if she has a fake idol. She can still use that and pretend that it's real. They can't split the votes on her. They theoretically could, but they don't trust each other to split the votes on her. So I think they absolutely will not try to get her out next week or whenever they lose the immunity. And I think that it puts her in a great spot to work with people that she didn't betray people's trust. She didn't, she didn't try to ruin the whole plan or anything like that. So I like the move. I like Chrissy. I think she's really smart. I'm looking forward to seeing what she does.
So are Ben and Chrissy more likely to target Alan, or are they more likely to work with the other power couple?
So I think it depends. Like, if they lose the next challenge and they have to go to tribal again, I think you have to look at it in terms of like, how do I survive this tribe? Because we keep losing. And if that keeps happening, we need to make sure we survive. In that case, I think you take a shot at the couple. You take Alan with you. That gives you full control over your tribe. You can take out the remaining person from the couple, or Alan, or both of them in the next coming weeks if you continue to lose. But if you've gone through a bunch of immunity challenges, you haven't gone back to tribal for a while, you want to make sure your team is strong for going into a merge. You think you'll only go to one or two at most tribals with this tribe. Then I think you go, okay, maybe we don't want Alan. Maybe we would want this power couple as a big threat, both physically and the fact that they're a pair. I think that's a big threat in front of me. So, that's a good idea. Alan obviously could be a threat, but again, that could also be the Josh factor, the Alan meatball thing, where it's like, they see how like crazy he is and they think, well, he's not really that much of a threat, in the end game. These two thinkers behind him, they're the real threat. I think you can avoid that if you keep the power couple in front of you. But it really just depends on the relationships that you have and how they feel about the people moving forward.
Yeah, I like what your robot brain is putting down here. I think if they go to a tribal council this upcoming week, I think what you want to do is break up the power couple, because if you're Chrissy, then you still have the other half of the power couple ahead of you, whereas that if you are part of this duo with Ben and then you guys vote off Alan this week, all of a sudden that next time you go to tribal council, Chrissy is looking like the most likely person to go home. So I think that's probably the best way forward, unless Alan is just completely out of control, where he, instead of like getting his feet under him and stabilizing, he just becomes increasingly more difficult to live with.
Yeah, which is certainly possible.
Certainly a possibility.
Yeah. And something else that was talked about on First One Out was, we cut back to when Alan was talking preseason and he said that he wanted to do this. He wanted to falsely accuse somebody of having an idol. And he loved the idea of like my word versus theirs. So like, for as erratic as we say that Alan is, like, I do think there's an idea behind the thought that like maybe he intentionally made this up and never thought that he had an idol to begin with, because this is something he said he was going to do preseason. It didn't come across that way in the episode, but I think it's interesting to think about.
But he's gone so far down that path and he's not like abundantly clear in his confessionals of like, make no mistake, I in no way think they have an idol. I think he's just like sort of saying like, worst case scenario is, hey, maybe they don't have an idol and I'm just pointing the finger at them. That's still great. There's no downside with this plan. But I don't think that he is going out. This was something that you guys talked about on the LFC roundtable, this idea of the proactive lie of just making up fiction and putting it on somebody of like, hey, guess what I heard? This person is talking to this person, or this person has the immunity idol. I don't get the sense that even though he's saying that, and now I've pointed the finger at them, this is great. I don't feel like that he just all of a sudden day one decided, okay, I don't like this power couple getting together. I'm going to make up this thing out of nowhere. I mean, maybe it's okay. They probably have the idol, but even if they don't, but do you think that he believes they have the idol or not?
It's hard to tell. I think that it doesn't matter to him. I think that maybe he thought they did initially, but now that he's like made the accusation, the line that sticks out to me is like, I love the idea of my word versus theirs. The fact that feels comfortable with that makes me feel like the second it becomes that, he's just going to double down on his word. He feels like as long as it can't be disproven, I'm just going to keep fighting my case.
Well, what if somebody actually finds the idol then?
Then I think he's going to go, whoops.
Right.
There's another idol.
It's multiple idols.
Yeah. I think that he feels very confident that like, no, you can't prove me wrong and I'm a better talker than you. So I'm going to convince people that I'm right and you're wrong when there's no evidence to sway people either way. And I think that's going to backfire on him. I don't think that works at all. I think that, the accuser very rarely comes out the victor in these kind of things.
All right, Taryn, I have a question especially for you. And this is sent from one of our listeners. Aubrey wants to know how you would have handled some of the situations in this premiere of Survivor HHH.
Hey, Rob and Taryn, it's Aubrey. I am a huge fan of Taryn. I've been a big fan of the robot for a while now, and I've really enjoyed getting to listen to the Taryn show and getting to see these different sides of Taryn that I guess I didn't know really existed, these more emotional, more tender sides. And I'm thinking if we have these two different Taryns, this robot Taryn and this tender Taryn, it might be beneficial in sorting through some potentially questionable strategic decisions we've seen this week. So I'm hoping that between the two Taryns, we can get to the bottom of this. Thank you guys so much.
So Aubrey wants to know, which side of your personality would have come out in the various incidents that happened this week? Would it be the robot Taryn or tender Taryn that ended up coming to the forefront this week?
Should I pick a specific situation?
Okay, no, I have some specific moments to ask you about, and then you tell me which of the two Taryns would show up in any given situation, okay?
All right, hit me.
Okay. All right. Would it be robot Taryn or tender Taryn that would come up when Mike goes looking for the idol? If you were Joe, how would you have handled that where you spot Dr. Mike looking for the idol? Tender Taryn or robot Taryn?
Oh, you got to go tender Taryn. You got to approach softly, try to get on his side, especially if you think he does have an idol. You don't want to be, the person that he doesn't like, that he feels bad about. So you got to approach it tenderly.
Okay. And what would that sound like?
I don't know. Just like, hey, Mike, what's up?
That's tender Taryn? That sounds like robot Taryn.
Hey, Mike, you wouldn't confront him to begin with. It would be a different confrontation. You'd be talking to him. You'd be already deep in a conversation, a personal conversation with him about something else in the camp. You'd be like, you'd be laughing with each other and you'd be like, yeah, I did see you walking around. Don't worry about it. I walk around too. Did you find anything? I have no luck doing it. You just gotta be a soft approach there.
Soft approach. Okay. All right. What about if we got to have you in the situation that JP found himself in, where Alan asks you if you had the idol? Who comes out there, robot Taryn or tender Taryn?
Tender Taryn would be entirely inappropriate with my pants down. So I got to go with robot Taryn with that one. I think I would have been very just straightforward, try to like present a logical case against Alan and make him seem like he is the crazy person there. There was obviously no winning Alan over in that moment. He was guns blazing. So just be like, look, I don't have an idol. Here's why. List the bullet points and be like, I don't know what more you want from me. You can see all you want. There's nothing here for you. Full on robot mode.
You wouldn't have tried the Allen. So you were in the NFL. What was that like? Could change the subject.
I mean, again, if you're in a situation where, theoretically your pants could be down at any moment, you want to avoid tenderness, I think. You want to make sure you stay professional and robotic.
Okay. And then finally, what if you found the super idol and had to decide who to give it to, robot Taryn or tender Taryn?
Oh, see, you got to do a combo. You got to think out the strategy, and then you got to look emotionally and see who's going to be grateful for it. Who can you work with when they receive it, or when you get to emerge and you can talk to them? You have to be able to think both strategically and tenderly. I really liked what Ryan did with it. Obviously, we didn't see too much of his reasoning, but I love the idea of sharing it with Devin. I feel like that really helped bond them together. That's going to be a huge get for him. And I liked the idea of trying to reach across the aisle and make relationships with people from other tribes. I like that thought process, the idea behind that. So I think that's a combination of both.
All right, Taryn, let's take another call. This is a question from Andrew, who wants to know about what Mike might be hiding on his person, and we're not talking about the hidden immunity idol. Here's a question from Andrew.
Hi, Rob and Taryn. Andrew C. here. In the premiere episode, Mike reveals to Joe that while he doesn't have an idol in his pocket, he does have rope. Is this Chekhov's rope? Is Mike going to use it to make a fake idol in the future?
Okay, so what do you think about Mike? And he has a piece of string in one pocket and another piece of string in the other pocket. Is this paving the way for ultimately Mike to make a fake hidden immunity idol? Or could Mike have something else planned for these pieces of string?
Well, man, when he said Chekhov's rope, I was like, what, is he going to strangle Joe in the night with it? Like... I don't know. I mean, like, we could certainly see that. But I don't think it's particularly likely, but we could see the strings pop up. So, I mean, this has been a few seasons in a row where we've talked about inanimate objects winning the game. What if these strings pull a immunity run down the road?
Yeah, they're pulling all the strings. But that's what I think that maybe what Mike could end up doing, that forget making a hidden immunity idol, could Mike, in a potential final tribal council scenario, much like Michaela, the game changer last season, bring props to the final tribal council and say, hey, all season long, you guys thought I was just the sex doctor going around talking about my work the whole time. But the whole season, what you didn't know is that I was the super fan and I was the puppet master. Here are the strings I used to control all of you all season long. Mike drop on the floor and then wins 10-0-0.
And then he pulls the string out from like the two players in front of him, their ears. Yes. Like, oh,
he's like, hey,
God, it's your string. Yeah.
Joe, what's this behind your back? Oh, is this the string I used to control you the whole game? It was like, what? How did you do that? Don't worry about it.
Remember when I showed this to you day one?
Yeah. I like it. This is
there
great.
You go.
This is great.
He could also like when you first said it, I thought maybe like bring it to like a fire making challenge. What if you were able to just take out some string? Yeah, just like tie the strings together, loop them around the top string, and then you've got a lower point of focus for the fire. Light the string on fire. You got the whole thing done.
Okay, I like this. Let's call this string theory.
I love it.
Okay. What Mike is doing with the strings this season. One thing I want to keep track of this season, I would like to keep a running tally of the total number of urology puns that Mike gives us this season. Here's this week's entry.
Winning Survivor is the biggest dream in my life. My wife thinks I'm crazy for doing this. My kids think I'm going to die, but I'm going to rise to the occasion and win.
There you go.
I love Mike. I really want to see him go far.
Fun character. Yeah. Fun character there for Mike.
I'm a sex doctor.
Why was there a question mark at the end of that sentence?
He was like, is this really a healer? I'm a sex doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a sex doctor?
I wonder if they told him he had to say it that way and he was like unsure about it. Like, I'm a sex doctor?
I mean, I was going to say I'm a urologist, but they keep telling me I guess I'm a sex doctor.
Yeah.
And then they just cut the I guess.
Okay. There you go. All right. And here is another question for you. We talked about with Ethan about how Dr. Mike and Mrs. Zahalski ended up naming their son after the winner of Survivor Africa, Ethan Zahn. Here is a question from one of our listeners who wants to know about the long-term ramifications of the babies named after survivors.
Hey, Rob and Taryn. I had two questions for you. First, who's more likely to win in the season of Colbys versus Ethans when all those kids reach 18? Is it a Colby or is it an Ethan? And second, what is the most negative difference in age in names after a Survivor player came on the air? I want Will for America to crunch those numbers or you guys to brainstorm which name went down in popularity due to somebody's performance on Survivor. Bye.
Okay. Could we end up one day, Taryn, with a season of Colbys versus Ethans of all of the babies named after survivors? And maybe Colby and Ethan will come back and captain those tribes that were kids that were named after them.
Could it be a Colby, Ethan, Rob, John season?
Sure.
Four tribes.
But you have to find enough people that name their kids after Robs or Johns.
I mean, I think there's enough Johns in the world. And then
sure, but,
you
not,
know, you
but
got...
not people who name their kid after a Survivor John. I mean, what are they going to name them? John Fincher?
Yeah, I mean, John Fincher, the legendary John Fincher.
I guess John Cochran, but they just named the baby Cochran at that point, right?
Yeah, I guess you can count all the Cochrans as Johns.
Yeah, but they have to be named after, like, the Survivor fan parents name their baby after a Survivor contestant. Could they come back and then be captained by that person?
I wonder if anyone has named their child Cochran, not realizing that Cochran is his last name.
Let us know if somebody gave a kid Cochran as a first name. That would be very important information. So we did some research over here in terms of the question, has a name ever become less popular because of a survivor? Is that possible? But our research is rather inconclusive at this point. The only person that I could think of that might have had a negative association at the time when Survivor was popular enough to really impact this sort of thing, to me, was going to be Jerry. And yeah, according to some research that was done, and again, shout out to Will from America, who researched the Ethans and the Colbys as well, that we found out that Jerry was a name that had been declining for a while, and it did not seem as though Jerry Manthe's involvement in Survivor of the Australian Outback and being a villain in that season had any correlation to that decline.
Yeah, it's good. Like, you know, all press is good press. Doesn't matter if it's a bad connotation. I think it's people are going to like be like, oh, well, I would have named my child Jerry, but man, watching Jerry on Survivor, no way. You know, I think people are inspired when they're trying to, like, people aren't negative when they're naming their kids, right? Like, they're thinking, who do I want to name them after? Not who do I not want to name them after?
Oh, I disagree, because as somebody who has named two children, I do think that there are a lot of names that are, gee, I like that name, but I hate this person. That's disqualifying for me, and I don't want my kid to share a name with that person. So definitely, I do think that there is the negative part of it as well.
Well, you certainly have more experience than I do in naming children, so yes. I'll give you that one.
So I agree that there is the aspirational, but there is also the negative connotation that goes along with it. I'm trying to think if there's any like really unique names from Survivor players that might have just been completely knocked out of consideration for a baby name. Can't imagine there's a lot of babies named Dreams.
Yeah, or Sugar.
Sugar, right. I mean, Sugar has a beautiful baby, but she did not name the baby Sugar after her. So if anybody has any, actually, it might be fun to know if there are any parents that are out there that listen to this podcast that rejected a baby name because it shared the name of an unpopular survivor. Again, there's so many different people from reality TV that I think that there might be some, oh God, no, I hate that person. I was going to name my baby that, but now I don't want that because I hate that Big Brother contestant, that Survivor contestant. I think that that would be a very funny thing to share. Survivor at robhasawebsite.com if you have any stories like that. Taryn, let me play you a couple of clips from this week that we haven't got a chance to touch on. This is something that Patrick ended up talking about. We had a scene where Allie was talking about how she'd like to work with Patrick. She doesn't know if she should or not. Seems like somebody that she could trust. Obviously, in First One Out, she talks about how they went to college together. That was not part of the show. But an interesting moment from our introduction to Patrick.
I forgot I had a crab in my pants.
So he, as he's holding a walking stick, he forgot that he had a crab in his pants. Now, we could, you know, take the easy road and talk about, ah, ha, ha, he has crabs and they're in his pants. But no, seriously, I want to know why, what was the function of putting a crab into his pants?
Rob, it all goes full circle. You know, he probably heard through the grapevine about JP's situation and how he had to drop trow and hop. So I think he was practicing. How do I fit something in there that stays in even if I'm hopping up and down? You got to really tuck it in good. And then he did so well, he forgot it was there.
Yeah. Well, the crab could be useful in that scenario where you're hiding a immunity idol on your naked person. Because if you could get the crab to hold on to one side of the immunity idol and then the crab to, you know, hold on to something else, then you could pull off some sort of Houdini maneuver of let me get naked and turn around. Look, see, I'm not holding anything. Look, I have nothing on me. I'm wearing no pants. I have no pockets, no immunity idol.
Yeah, there you go. Or you could put it around the crab. So like put it on the crabs. And then if a crab falls out, you're just like, look, no immunity idol on me. Oh, let me grab my crab, though. He just lives in there. You know, this don't pay attention to the crab, but obviously no immunity idol.
Although that's also a great thing where, you know, we had talked about this idea of, I think I had been doing like one of the patron Facebook chats that I do in the Facebook group. And there was an idea that was talked about of somebody bringing a pocket sandwich to a casting call. And I had said, I think that this is actually really brilliant. This is a great idea. Do that. And so the idea of having a pocket crab at the point where like Alan is interrogating JP or Dr. Mike is being interrogated by Joe. Hey, what's in your pocket? Empty out your pockets. And instead of handing, oh, I have a piece of string in this pocket, a piece of string in that pocket, if you take a live animal out of your pocket, I think that that is going to change the tenor of the conversation so much so that people will, wait, hold on, forget this idol talk. Why do you have a crab in your pants? Like, I don't know. Like, no, but why did you put it in there? Does it help? Like, are you worried about it pinching you? I didn't think about that, but are you going to eat it? I mean, there will be a million follow-up questions to why is a crab in your pocket? And now the idol is like complete. You can't even think about that anymore.
Yeah. It's just where the crab goes. I don't know why you're asking. Why are you being so weird about this?
This is brilliant. So brilliant move by Patrick. We also saw Ryan talk about how he found the hidden advantage and he would hide that advantage in his pants.
I found an advantage on the boat. Nobody knows about it. It's in my pants.
Taryn, somehow the theme to Survivor 35 is what's in everybody's pants?
It's in my pants.
Yeah, I mean, people, they're really ragging on Alan, but if somebody had told Ryan to drop trow, they would have found a super idol. So, you know,
we really
something.
Survivor has brilliantly threaded all of these stories together of one story in each tribe about a Survivor player who may or may not have something hidden.
It's in my pants.
So kudos to Survivor for that. the theme of the episode.
It's like, yeah, it's like Crash. Like all the stories are, they've got a common theme of something in your pants.
They're all intertwined with Mike's string, all wrapped up in one neat little bow that's going in somebody's pants.
Yeah, that was something else. I don't remember if it made the cut on First Run Out, but Probst was talking about how when Ryan was trying to like get out of the boat after after the marooning, his pants kept falling down because he was trying to, like, the idol kept falling out, and he was just like really struggling to keep his pants on and keep the idol hidden as that whole thing was playing out. Which I thought
it's
was
in my pants.
And then before we get to the Survivor social media, let me just take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, Taryn. Those are our friends over at TrueCar, because in order to feel comfortable, you're getting a fair price. You need to get pricing contacts. That's information that empowers you to feel confident. With TrueCar, you'll get to see what other people in your market paid for the car that you want. And from there, you can connect with a local certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. You know, not everybody, when they go to buy a car, ends up having somebody like Healer Joe with them to be able to really give it to the car dealer and say, hey, I feel like you're not giving me a fair price. What gives?
Well, it's just string. I don't know why I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, I'm just doing you a favor. I had the courtesy to come to you and tell you I don't think I'm getting a fair deal here. TrueCar is going to show you what other people in your area paid for the car that you want, so you get to hustle less. Now you know what a fair price is and you can feel confident. And once you register, you'll see the pricing on the actual inventory. That's competitive pricing offered to you by a TrueCar certified dealer for an actual vehicle on their lot. It's pricing you'll see before going to the dealership, so you can feel confident when you show up. TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. And for the first time in Survivor 35, let's talk some Survivor social media.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Survivor tweets. They're better than forgetting about that crab in your jeans. Tweets.
Yes.
That was weird to hear at once X speed.
Yes, everything's at 1x speed here. Of course, the music for the Survivor social media is composed by the amazing Ryan Elder, who is the person that brings you all the music of the breakout hit series Rick and Morty, which has really just exploded here as they are now in their third season. We used to talk about Rick and Morty and people are like, what? Now Rick and Morty is, kudos to everybody over there and the outstanding work that they're doing on that show. And here are some of the highlights from Survivor social media. Let me start off with the crossover Survivor Big Brother social media, Taryn. Did you see that at Caleb Reynolds tweeted, I'm ready to release my ninja skills on at Ninja Warrior at Matt Eisman. What are we waiting for?
Caleb?
Yeah. Beast Mode Cowboy.
It's so cold.
Everybody. Now that Matt Eisman entered the dojo of being on the Taryn show, now he's going to just get propositioned by all these survivors. And like, just like with Celebrity Big Brother, that there's different people that are like, hey, put me into Celebrity Big Brother. Matt Eisman has to deal with this.
Yeah, I really broke American Ninja Warrior into the realm of Survivor and Big Brother. It's really on me.
This is your fault for getting Matt Eisman, getting all these tweets now.
I guess so. I mean, there have been survivors on American Ninja Warrior before. I believe both Ozzy and Frosty have competed on American Ninja Warrior.
Who did better?
Frosty by far. Ozzy, I think, was out on like the first or second obstacle.
Okay. Boy, why? It's a completely different skill set?
I mean, I guess so. Ozzy, he's a great swimmer, but if in American Ninja Warrior, if you're swimming, then you're out. So
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Here is some other tweets. We had a number of the female survivors really lamenting that they did not come up with the Allen strategy. Andrea Belke tweeted, why didn't I think of this? Play the paranoid card to get guys to strip. Hashtag Survivor.
I mean, according to you, Jeff Probst came up with this idea for the women on Game Changers. Yeah. So,
well, they've taken it and they've run with it. Hannah Shapiro, she tweeted out, I tried for 39 days on Survivor to see some man butts. Allen does it in 39 minutes. Props, dude. There you go.
If he doesn't win Survivor 35, he's got another calling.
Yeah. Speaking of nudity, Troyzan ended up tweeting out, "It's not Survivor until we see the old blurred ass shot." Hashtag fuzzy squares.
Yeah, you know, that's the first thing that I think of when I think of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Nice. There you go. Survivor Dave Ball tweeted, "I need more dogs, Taryn." Now, why was he talking about that when his cousin Alan Ball is on this season? Why is he? You think he'd be talking more about this season and everything going on?
You would think so. I mean, again, his cousin Alan Ball showing that he's a master at getting guys' clothes off. I don't know. Maybe he was just when he was seeing JP naked, he was just thinking about the dog Thor. Who knows? Dave Ball, he's a crazy guy.
Okay. Yes, he is. And then also, Taryn, this was a fun exchange between Malcolm and Cochran. Malcolm tweeted to Cochran, "Dude, you're in trouble. Turtleneck is aiming for your niche." And Cochran said, "You don't think I've already spent every waking moment since the cast announcement praying for his implosion?"
Well... Ryan, when Ryan's coming,
it's
for
in
you.
My pants.
Yeah. Watch out. Watch out.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it is. Okay. And then, Taryn, there was one tweeter in particular who was on fire in fuego during the Survivor HHH premiere. Can you guess who it is?
Was it Rupert?
Tweets, baby, tweets, Rupert. Yeah. Tweets that are better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets,
"I'm back." Ready to go. Rupert shot out of a cannon for Survivor, much like the cannon that he had to push in the Survivor Pearl Islands premiere. He was raring to go.
Do you think he forgot about the game, or do you think he just doesn't care anymore?
I don't know. That's a good question. But Rupert was firing on all cylinders for the Survivor premiere. So
Rupert 2, Rupe Harder.
Yes. So, Taryn, of course, let's bring back the Rupert tweets game for this week. I'm going to give you four tweets. Three of them are going to be tweeted by the real Rupert Bonham, and then one of them is going to be a fake Rupert tweet. Okay, are you ready for this?
I'm ready. I don't like losing though, Rob. So I'm very geared up for this.
I know, and I know that you are especially salty after you lost the Big Brother draft.
It took a long time, but I finally lost. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Who knows? This could be a harbinger of what the year to come looks like for you, Taryn.
Oh, no.
All right. So here we go. Here is a Rupert tweet number one. He says, "Laura says it's a good idea. No one asked me to strip when I had a rock in my pants in Heroes versus Villains." Okay.
Okay.
Number two, "I love it when Survivor challenges are that close."
Sounds appropriately Rupert-esque.
Okay. Number three, "Everyone is so nice the first day of Survivor."
All right.
And number four, "You can make fire. Collect as much of that stuff as you can."
Okay. I feel like one of those does not belong. Three of them are appropriately like very generic Rupert tweets, and one of them is like far out. Like if Rupert really was back with a vengeance, I feel like the first one would be very appropriate, but it stands out so much. I gotta go with the first one.
Maybe that's the trick.
It might be.
Now, you are right, Taryn. You are the first winner of Rupert tweets. Appropriately, we hit it. That was the first one out. That was the fake Rupert tweet. No, but Rupert did have some epic tweets as well during the episode, and which were not Rupert-esque. He did tweet out, here's a good one. He said, "It's going to take a while to learn these people's names. Which one is Ashley?" I like that. He also said, I now hate when they target the older, since I'm now an older.
Oh, man, he's going to make older a thing.
Yeah, that should really just be like framed in some sort of, I'm going to get that put up on my wall. I'm going to go to Canvas People and get that as a lesson that I look at in the mirror every day. I now hate when they target an older because now I'm an older.
I never would have guessed that one was Rupert.
Yeah. But best of all, this is a tweet that Rupert sent out, and Rupert tweeted, wow, this looks just like the beginning of Survivor Pearl Islands. And then that tweet, I believe, was retweeted by the CBS account, to which one of our listeners, Alexandra, replied to that tweet and said, when the CBS Survivor account retweets the Rupert bot. And then Rupert responded, not a bot. So Rupert did not like being told that his tweets were from a bot.
Look, Rupert, there's nothing wrong with being a robot. Just there's nothing wrong with being called a robot either. You don't have to defend yourself so vehemently, like, oh, this is such a bad thing. I feel very offended. Josh was saying it all summer long. He's not a robot. I just lay off the robots, guys.
Okay. All right. Well, Taryn, excellent work here today, and looking forward to what you have coming up on the Taryn Show. Can you tease who the next guest might be that you're going to be doing a long form interview with?
I can do more than tease it, Rob. I just got off the call with Josh Wigler himself. We talked for like 2.5 hours, so it might be cut down a little bit, but this is a supersized Taryn Show. We talked all about Josh's upbringing. He used to play with G.I. Joes. He's got lots of Bens in his life. How he got involved with writing and MTV and Survivor and Rob and going out to Fiji. We talked about First One Out. There's tons of great stuff in there. So really looking forward to you guys hearing this one.
Yeah. I wouldn't have really thought that Josh was a G.I. Joe guy.
Yeah. You know what? You wouldn't have thought I was a G.I. Joe guy either.
You had a lot of G.I.
Joes? We discovered many secrets. I didn't have G.I. Joes, but I played with G.I. Joes at a friend's house. We like created stories with, I didn't even know who they were.
Got it.
I didn't watch the show. We just had the action figures.
Yeah.
Josh, of course, knew all the character names, and he had a wealth of knowledge about G.I. Joe.
I never really was a G.I. Joe person. I just felt like that the figures had like too many opposable parts. I just didn't like, there was too much going on there. I had like a lot of like He-Man figures, and they just sort of like moved like at the joints, like the major joints, like at the leg and the arm. But the G.I. Joe had like, you know, elbow and like kneecap, and it was everything moved.
It was perfect for body contortion after explosions, Rob. You gotta like twist them up.
I guess so.
You know nothing about playing with G.I. Joes, clearly.
Clearly. All right, Taryn, we need a hashtag for this episode of the podcast. I got a couple of options to float past you. We have hashtag number one, string theory. Hashtag number two, tender Taryn. And hashtag number three, Alan Meatball.
Oh, man, they're all pretty good. I like string theory. I like the alliteration in Tender Taryn. And Alan Meatball, it reminds me of that guy cracking himself up, which is very amusing to me.
Okay. For me, I feel like it's got to be... Yo! You got an idol!
let's repeat this for all the non-Big Brother watchers. The guy that you just heard, he did in fact win Big Brother 19 after bashing pots and pans in people's faces while singing that song on multiple occasions.
Right. For really no reason. None of it made any sense.
Because I'm ready to serve Jess and Cody some meatball smoothies all week. Hey, Jess and Cody, you think you like the taste of those, meatball?
The winner of Big Brother 19.
Oh, man.
There you go. All right.
Yeah. Well, this could double as another one of those why Survivor watchers should watch Big Brother.
Yes. All right. Taryn is on Twitter, of course, at Armstrong Taran. So check out everything he has going on there. And of course, if you missed any of First One Out, especially the final episode, it is not too late. Go to robinsonwebsite.com/firstoneout. Spell it out. FirstOneOut. And you could hear all six episodes there. And of course, subscribe to the Taran Show, which is also in our Rob Has a Podcast Wrap Ups feed, directly at robiswebsite.com/Taran Show. Taran, is there anything else?
Of course, you can always check out the American Ninja Warrior coverage we've done. I think we're going to do like a crossover podcast. We're doing something like a Ninja Warrior Awards. So if you're interested in that, you can check that out. And of course, we'll probably be doing some off-season Big Brother coverage. We'll probably like rank some stuff. We may also get the LFC together to talk some Survivor. So I'm sure that'll be on the reality TV Rehap-Ups feed, along with the Taran Show and all of that stuff. So plenty of stuff to check out. Always looking to figure out where I can talk into a microphone.
Okay. Can't wait for that. Of course, we still have a lot more to do. I'm going to be back with Josh Wiggler on our next edition of Rob Has a Podcast. We'll be talking about everything from the premiere with Josh Wiggler, who I'm sure will have much more to share from his time in Fiji during these first 3 days of the show. And then don't miss in our Rehap-Ups feed, the RHAP B&B with Mike Bloom and Liana Boris is already out. They talked with Jordan Parhar about the Survivor premiere. And then Why Katrina Lost is coming. David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis are going to be talking about everything that went wrong for Katrina and why she ultimately was the first one out of season 35. So check that all out on robhasawebsite.com. Of course, if you want to go even deeper behind the scenes of Rob Has a Podcast, you can become a patron. We are going to be having our behind the scenes video of everything that went on during the Big Brother finale coming up in our Rehapisodes, which is one of the incentives that you can get if you are a patron of Rob Has a Podcast. Find out more about that at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Have a good one. Thank you so much, Taran, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.